Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Hello and welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time, the area's offering great value compared to their posher neighbours close by. In this episode, we're focusing on two very different areas of London, both full of history and both stepping into the spotlight this year. In an uncertain property market, buyers tend to opt for an established location with proven appeal. But as confidence returns, is the attention set to shift to nearby neighbourhoods that have perhaps been overshadowed? Suddenly, people may be starting to notice that these are anything but second best. So in this episode, we're going to be taking a closer look at two such spots in London, Crystal Palace and Pimlico. Crystal Palace in southeast London has tended to be elbowed aside in the popularity stakes by its neighbour Dulwich. But Crystal Palace has, as well as a great big TV transmitter, great homes, great connections, green spaces and amazing views over the city. All for a lot less than you'd pay in Dulwich. In the same way, Pimlico is less well-known than Belgravia, its next-door neighbour. But Pimlico has the same gorgeous white stucco-fronted houses in garden squares. It's also handy for almost everywhere in London and, compared to Belgravia, rather more affordable. I'm keen to know about the potential of both these London locations and whether their time has come to step into the spotlight. So why don't we get the conversation started? I'm joined by Dominic Agace, Chief Executive of Winkworth, by Jake Woolford from Winkworth Crystal Palace, and Rob Oatley from Winkworth Pimlico. Great that you can join us. Now, over to you first, Dominic. I just want to get a general sense of what's happening in the market. Interest rates are coming down. We've got this feeling there's more optimism around. Is this a great background for the places that used to be seen maybe as second best to become the new stars?
I think so. I think, as you say, there's a lot of optimism around. Things have changed and picked up pace on the positivity, actually, as the year started. And, you know, in theory, the inflation fight is won and it's on the decline and interest rates are set to decline and employment is held together and we've got real living, real wage increases over and above inflation. So those are all really positive things for the property market. I don't know whether we've quite got ourselves out of the malaise of thinking negatively, but actually things are looking good. And so, yeah, I think now the property market in London in particular has always operated on a sort of wave basis, really, where, you know, these waves in good times as optimism picks up, the wave of buyer interest moves out through the city into new areas that are explored by buyers that develop with those new homeowners. And so whilst, you know, in a more uncertain time, perhaps people retrench to the sort of established areas and you know, see a bit more value in coming back into those areas. As things become optimistic, people look further afield and each wave gets higher and each time the property prices of those areas goes higher.
So if I were house hunting now, what would be the indicators I should look for in an area that it's up and coming?
So I think you just have to look at, I mean, a couple of things really. So one, proximity to an established area. You know, you look at some of the areas around London and the story is fairly obvious. You know, you look at the North Kensington Queen's Park area, for example, just at the bottom of Notting Hill, and you see how the sort of hillbillies of Notting Hill have moved there because they love the area and they love the culture and its proximity to it. It's been really important. That's an important part. The other important parts are you know, architecture. People love, us Brits love our architecture and the environment we live in. We love our independent businesses that feel create character within an area. So those are important too. And of course, the old transport is forever important and will remain an important part of an area establishing itself in the long term.
But then there are also those, what I would always call the AGACE indicators.
Yes.
The great butcher, independent butcher, and independent artisan baker. Should you be looking out for those?
I think they're a must, yeah. As we know, I have strong views on the butcher index across London. But no, the butcher's important. That's part of, I suppose, that pocket of independent businesses and eateries and places to socialise and character, really. And butchers are a key part. You know, places for brunch are also an important part, as are, you know, local bars and local shops and vintage shops. They, all those things create an environment that people feel is bespoke and gives them joy, I suppose, in their daily lives.
So the key words are original, individual, independent. That's what we need to be looking for.
I think so. I mean, not every area, new area, has those features, and that doesn't stop a new area developing where it's got the other parts. But certainly look at some of them, and you know, as I said, the Queen's Park or Kendal Rise, you know, they're very music orientated as well. So they had that environment, and prices moved up dramatically once they caught everyone's attention.
I want to get your sense of the broader mood among home buyers. Are they feeling upbeat or still a bit fearful?
So I think the answer is upbeat. I mean, we're looking at some our own statistics and the people registering to buy a property through all our offices and website and the like is 29% ahead of this time last year. So that's significant. And the people looking to who have instructed us to sell their property is 40% ahead of this time last year. So those are dramatically higher numbers than perhaps during the malaise of the post-Liz Truss budget. So I think that indicates to me that people want to go into the market and trade. And so that is a sort of positive backdrop to how the year should and hopefully will unfold.
So 2024, the year when the British get moving.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think we talked about it, didn't we, in the towards the end of 23, and we thought this was the period of peak uncertainty, and I think that was the period of peak uncertainty. As long as, you know, those nasty surprises to the upside on inflation, interest rates, and people are now talking about targets being met by April for Bank of England on inflation side, then things are you know, we're not entering a boom, but things are looking positive, and hopefully the worst is behind us.
So next to you, Jake, Crystal Palace, it's known for its football team, although the stadium is actually several miles away, isn't it?
Yeah, correct.
Can you tell me something about the area, its history, its position, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, of course. Well, Crystal Palace's roots really come from the Great Exhibition, which came in the sort of mid-1850s. And the Crystal Palace was moved to that part of London, Sydenham Hill, on the basis that it's one of the highest points. So after the Great Exhibition, they decided that they wanted the whole of London to see the palace. So that is where the name comes from. So really, in terms of London suburbs, it's a reasonably new name, but it's come from South Dulwich and Sydenham Hill.
I mentioned the views earlier,
yeah,
over the whole of the city. They are extraordinary, aren't they?
Yeah, incredible. It's amazing, really, because you are so high. Whether you're looking south, you can see right across the South Downs, or if you look north, you can see right over the city, over South Bank, the Shard. It's incredible, really, on a clear day.
Now, despite all of that, Crystal Palace has tended to be seen as a bit of a Cinderella compared to Dulwich. To what extent do you think that's going to change this year?
Well, I think that's changed over the last couple of years. I mean, what we've seen, certainly in the house prices, over the last 5 years, they've gone up 21% compared to 8% that is Dulwich. Now, Dulwich Village aside, which is a bit of an anomaly, if you compare it to West Dulwich, which is very close to the college, and East Dulwich, which is very close to Lordship Lane, where the majority of the shops are, we offer great value for money. You get much bigger sort of detached early Victorian villas. And really, because we've got a high street, which is known as the Triangle, we've got that, which I know Dominic's spoken about before, that kind of artisan feel as well. So it's incredibly popular. And I think last year, with it being voted the number one place to live by the Sunday Times in London, it's just going to grow and grow and grow.
Now, Crystal Palace people, who are they and who are the new people moving in?
Creatives, really. The Ginger Line across East London to Shoreditch High Street, Dalston, Highbury and Islington has meant that a lot of the creatives that were looking to find a base as those markets went up and up and up came to South East London. So anyone that works in kind of tech or other industries such as graphics or whatever, they found home in Crystal Palace. And because there's so many independents, they've stuck with it. They've joined the community groups and it's got an amazing feel.
For anybody who's a fan of the Property Exchange and doesn't live in London, the Ginger Line, that's the London Overground, isn't it?
It is, yeah, exactly. Which runs from Crystal Palace up to Highbury and Islington, through Canada Water, Surrey Quays, Peckham, all through South East and East London.
So there's a lot of places you could actually commute to.
Yeah, I mean, the transport links are phenomenal. So really, if you stand at the top corner of the park in the centre of Crystal Palace, you're never further than a 10-minute walk from a train station. And if you go on the west to Gypsy Hill, you can get to Clapham Junction, London Bridge, London Victoria. Then if you go east, which is Penge and Crystal Palace, you can go to Highbury and Islington, again, London Victoria, London Blackfriars. So you're never more than 20 minutes from the centre of town, whichever part of the centre of town you want to go to.
So really convenient. Let's now talk prices. What would I pay for a two-bedroom flat, say?
So a two-bedroom sort of converted Victorian terrace with no outside space, they start at about 400,000. And then for your top two-bedroom flats, split-level garden flats, you're looking at about 650,000.
And that compares with Dulwich?
Yeah, we're probably about 20%, 25% lower in terms of prices. It's funny because actually for a first-time buyer, Crystal Palace is probably seen as a better option because our transport links are that much better. So if you are going into the office 3-4 days a week, to have those transport links that you have in Crystal Palace, you don't have those in Dulwich. It's a bit more of an archaic train system. You've got one train station, which is going towards Herne Hill. So it's much more to do with the school system around there. And that's why that's kind of built up so much over time.
Now, if I was looking for a really big family house, yeah, what kind of price?
So I would say that a big detached early Victorian, late Georgian villa will probably sell for somewhere around 2.5. But if you're looking for sort of a substantial family home, 4-5 semi-detached or detached, 100-foot garden, you could probably pay 1.5. So that, compared to Dulwich per se, you're probably paying 2.25 for the former, and for the latter, you're probably paying about 3.5 million. So it's a significant decrease.
So it has every justification for being on the map this year. Before I start asking about Pimlico, I want you to tell me what's the very best thing about Crystal Palace.
There's a couple of things which I love about Crystal Palace. I think the key thing for me and something that creates the most charm locally is the antique dealers. They pour out onto the high street on a Saturday afternoon. When the place is busy and the sun's shining, it's just an incredible place to be. 12 months ago, we had a fishmonger open up on Church Road, which is one side of the triangle in Crystal Palace.
And I'm sure the artisan butchers and bakers won't be far behind.
Exactly. I'm sure we'll see them in the next 6 months or so.
And now we're doing a quick trip across London to Pimlico. Rob, I suspect a lot of people may be a bit vague about where Pimlico actually is. We need the coordinates.
Yes, I think that other than the 1940s film Passport to Pimlico, it may be the case that people haven't heard much about the area. But Pimlico is the square roughly mile south of Victoria Station, bordered by Belgravia to the west, by Westminster to the east, the River Thames to the south, and St James's to the north.
And great history. Tell us about that.
So Pimlico has a fascinating history. It was actually given to the Grosvenor family as a dowry in 1677, along with Knightsbridge, Belgravia, and most of what we now know as Mayfair. And then due to increased demand for housing following the Great Fire of London and the plague, Lord Grosvenor contracted Thomas Cubitt, the master builder, in 1825 to develop Pimlico. Up until that point, it had mostly been sort of marshy fields with a few workers' cottages on. Using soil that they'd actually excavated from the construction of St Catherine's Docks, they filled in the marshy fields, and Cubitt created what we now know as Pimlico, which is essentially a grid of handsome white stucco terraces.
So thank you, Mr. Cubitt. So that's another thing we don't know. We didn't know about Pimlico. It's got gorgeous garden squares. What are the top addresses?
So, yes, it does have fabulous architecture akin to Belgravia. As we say, as people quite often say, it's a sort of little Belgravia or an extension to Belgravia. There's an 1877. So after Pimlico was created, there's a newspaper article, which I'll just read out, which I quite like, which described Pimlico as genteel, sacred to professional men, not rich enough to luxuriate in Belgravia proper, but rich enough to live in private houses. Its inhabitants were more lively than in Kensington, and yet a cut above Chelsea, which is only commercial, which I think is a fabulous way of describing the area as it was in 1877. And the addresses then and now are, the top addresses are the same, and they are Eccleston and Warwick Squares, which are fabulous, wide, stucco-fronted buildings, mostly broken up into flats now, but overlooking the private garden squares. And St. George's Square, which is another sort of garden square, although that's a public square. The grid, as referred to earlier, that Cubitt built is very much the sort of main body of the residences which are in Pimlico. Again, like I say, mostly sort of broken up into flats now, but typical white stucco-fronted grand early Victorian architecture.
Really sounds gorgeous. What's the price of admission? What would I pay for a flat and what would I pay for a house?
Obviously, depending on the size of the flat, these prices would vary. But I would say to start off with, to buy a two-bedroom flat in a nice road in the grid in Pimlico, you'd be looking at £700,000. The houses, which, as I say, are fewer and far between, but are pretty large. The houses are 2,500 square foot plus. You'd be looking at paying £2.5 million plus for a whole house, depending on condition and location.
So what would the top price be?
Well, some of the larger houses on the garden squares, for example, where they really are very large houses, can be £6, £7, £8 million.
But that's still considerably cheaper than Belgravia, isn't it?
We are, and I've analysed the statistics compared to our neighbours in Belgravia, we're about 50% of the price. So times everything by two that I've said for walking 5 minutes down the road and being in Belgravia.
Now, I asked Jake this about Crystal Palace. I'm going to ask you the same thing. What's the very best thing about Pimlico?
The best thing about Pimlico is the trade-off between location and architecture. You get Belgravia-style, Mayfair-style architecture. You are in the most central of locations, incredibly easy to get in and out of and around London, and yet you are at half the price. The shops and restaurants that are in Pimlico are getting better and better as each year goes past. We've got a Gales, we've got a Daylesford Farm Shop now 5 minutes walk away from the office. You've got the Ivy that has come in. You've got the fabulous Cinnamon Club, which has been around for a long time. So there really are a lot of fabulous things to do in Pimlico and around Pimlico.
And transport?
So Victoria Station is obviously a massive transport hub, which gets people in and out of London. And we're served by Pimlico Tube Station as well as Victoria Tube Station.
Right. Thank you very much for that great information about Pimlico and Crystal Palace. But it's back to you, Dominic. Now, I want you to draw on your experience to give us the names of some other areas that come to mind that used to be second best, but have now become the stars. They've joined the elite.
Yeah, I was thinking on this one. And obviously there's some ones that have still room to grow and establish. And every market slightly reflects this trend. So it's hard. But finding the new ones is obviously the trick. So within our realm, and obviously one has to stop one's consideration somewhere in our realm of our offices across London, you know, I think some of the interesting ones are, Ealing's a very interesting one. It has Crossrail, which has revolutionised transport for that area. It's into the city in, you know, sub half an hour, 20 minutes, 50 minutes to the West End, you know, houses, big gardens, lovely big architecturally, big Victorian houses with big gardens. And the price of about £650 per square foot, whereas you look at, another sort of prime southwest London suburb and they're sort of £850, £900, say, with a 40 minute to an hour commute. So something like that seems, coming off Chiswick and Shepherd's Bush seems a good spot.
Now, you're being very American here, Dominic. You're talking about pounds per square foot. what does that mean for the price of a really great family house?
Yeah, sorry. So I shouldn't be so definitive. And in the nuances of the English property market and the different architectural styles and aspects of them, price pounds per square foot isn't everything, but it is a good guide. And I think, from my point of view, from within the industry, I do look at it as a point of interest, not totally reliant on, but it does act as a good guide.
But still, a nice family house in Ealing.
Yeah,
how much would I be paying?
Exactly, in pounds, in actual pounds. So, it depends how big you go, doesn't it? But you can get a very nice one for, three, four bedroom at sort of 1.2 million with a nice big garden of 30, 40 foot. So they do go up, obviously, to, 3 million to fairly large, very large family houses. So, and where you are and whether you're near the common and such, all of the... The nuances of London property market. So picking a number is always a bit tricky.
Well, thank you for that. And that's about it. Dominic, Jake and Rob, thanks very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. And thanks for helping us to get to know two places that are going to be on the map this year. Do join us for next month's podcast. And if you want to know more, then be sure to subscribe.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.